phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time. Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. Want to thank Casey Abrams for that great bumper music. Simple Life is his song, and we're just borrowing it for the purpose of the show. I'm your host today, Cynthia Fernandez, and we're going to focus on real life experiences and real life stories from the people who are local, those of us who live on the central coast of California. This show was actually born from a love of storytelling, and a desire for a deeper connection amongst all living things, one person at a time. You know, during the holidays, there's a wonderful sort of increase of charity and giving and philanthropy of all sorts. But what is philanthropy, really? Most people think, like myself, that, philanthropy is for people who have lots of money. But I also remember a story about someone with millions of dollars by the name of Warren Buffett. I think he has the world record. Back in 2006, he made American history by giving the largest ever donation to a charity. He donated $37 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars, as an individual. And I have a quote from him. There are an unlimited number of good things to be done in the world, so you're probably going to have to hook up with people on the funding side who have a common goal. If you're working in education, go where the people who have shown an interest in education are, Mr. Buffett said. So today, more than ever, people really aren't feeling very financially secure. I mean, here it is, the holidays. It's winter solstice today. We have a turning of the seasons happening officially. And yet it's difficult for a lot of us to make ends meet, and we don't think of having extra money that we want to give away. So my question is, what is the definition of philanthropy? Our guest today is Deborah Goldstein of Enlightened Philanthropy, and she's been working in this field for several years. I want to welcome Deborah with her cold.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. And yes, please bear with my voice today.
We'll be gentle, Deborah, I promise. So let's start off with hearing your definition of the word philanthropy.
Well, I appreciate you saying my definition. The definition that I like to use, in addition to my own definition, is that which is basically the root of the word philanthropy, which means love of humankind. And there is nothing in this definition, in the root of the word, about money.
I'm so happy to hear that.
And we have, in our culture, come to a point where we see philanthropy as being about money. And I love that you used Warren Buffett as an opening example, because that's perfect. When people think about philanthropists these days, they think about an older white male with lots of money to give away. And yet, we can all be philanthropists as long as we love one another. It's as simple as that. And I would just add to that that my own definition of philanthropy is that we're giving of our time, we're giving of our talents, we're giving of our treasure or money, and we're giving of our ties or connections.
Well, I think we've had it all wrong then.
Well, I think there's certainly an opening for broadening the definition and rethinking who is a philanthropist. And that's part of what I hope to achieve with the work that I do.
And tell us a little bit about what you actually do. What is your work?
Sure. I am a philanthropic advisor. And essentially that means I work with individuals, couples, families who are interested in making some sort of philanthropic impact. And I help guide them in the process of their giving, whether that be through money or one of these other avenues. My specialty is in working with the next generation, so I especially like to work with families who are interested in bringing the next generation into their philanthropic decision making.
And you just sip that tea anytime you're ready.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I was wondering, maybe you can help with this. How do any of us
generally learn about the values of giving or being of service for that matter?
That's a great question, Cynthia. And really what we're finding in the research these days is that we learn these values through our family, through our parents, through our grandparents, through the traditions that have been handed down to us. In fact, there was a recent study that came out that found that 9 out of 10 children do give to charity. And the way that they're learning about this is not only by their parents being role models, but by their parents talking with them about their giving and why they give. Mm-hmm. And that is helping to pass down this tradition of philanthropy.
It really warms my heart when families, as a family, not separating the children out, but as a family, actually do works of service. So just to give an example, you know, helping out a soup kitchen is one of the things that comes to mind for Thanksgiving or literally any time, because let's face it, the need is always there, not just during the holidays. Families that do highway cleanup is another thought that comes to mind. But I bet you have a list of things that you've run across where families actually work as a unit to do things of service together.
Absolutely. And, you know, I grew up with that tradition myself. One of my favorite traditions was around the holiday time, we would go to the mall and we would find, you know, sort of a giving tree that they had. And we'd take a few of the little slips of paper there and learn about a kid in need who was not going to have the greatest of holidays because he or she was in a situation with their family where they wouldn't be getting presents. And that, wow, to me was really fun to give in that way. And you know, at that time in my life, I loved to shop. I loved to find good gifts for friends and family. And this was just another offshoot of that.
That also, Deborah, it illustrates that you see a connection between yourself and those that you haven't even met. And I just really want to tip my hat to you for that, because I think as a culture, that's not entirely common. I mean, we've just survived, if you will, a really big event in Big Sur. You know, the fire down in Big Sur cost untold dollars. A number of homes have been lost. In addition to that, there's been theft. And yet it also brings out the best in people, and people are helping out. I spoke to a friend yesterday who didn't have any effect in his home with that, but he said, you know, I just spent 30 hours straight, no sleeping, no nothing, and I don't regret it. I mean, I was happy to do it. So there's that aspect of our culture that is a continuation between ourselves and someone else. We recognize the need, and I love that phrase there, but for the grace of God go I, there is no separation on some level. And I also think, tell me if you also run across this, but sometimes people learn about giving and service through religious groups or some kind of spirituality. Maybe it's not in an organized religion. Sometimes it's through sports. It could also be through any kind of work or family situation like you mentioned for yourself.
That's such a great point, and I'm glad that you raised that, because there really are a myriad of ways that we can learn about giving. Oftentimes it starts at home, and then it can be reinforced in a religious setting, which for me it certainly was with the tradition of tzedakah and the Jewish religion. And then even what I think we're seeing a lot among the younger generation now is they're learning it from their peers. And so their peers may get really excited about some cause and they say, oh, well, you know, what is that about? I want to get involved in that. And so there, you know, it's great to have a culture in which we have empathy for one another. Just back to your comment about the Big Sur fire and knowing these tragedies. And I think if we all examine our lives, we can see that at some point we were given to.
Absolutely.
And so it behooves us to just pass that on in one form or another. Our lives become richer as a result of that giving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think you had mentioned previously that you learned it in a family setting. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an illustration about like what passions really brought you to doing this kind of work for other people?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting to reflect. Actually, I was thinking about our conversation today, one of the things that I was reminded of was I was in high school at a time when community service was just sort of at the forefront. You know, now it's really commonplace. And I looked for something that really meant a lot to me, and I hope you'll appreciate this because I volunteered at the library.
I love it.
I loved books. And so I was behind the scenes helping to put the books on the carts in the order so that the staff could go out and put the books in the right place on the shelves. And to me, that was it was actually really fun. I enjoyed interacting with the other volunteers. I enjoyed getting to see hundreds of titles that I might not otherwise see.
Right.
And I think that it's, like you say, it's this passion that drives us. And somehow I sort of found my path into a nonprofit world after graduating from college and graduate school, and that felt like a very natural place for me, a place in which I could give back in my talents, and I fell into the fundraising world not knowing that that was something that was going to be my path in any way at all, and it's been a really amazing path to see what the nonprofit world contributes to our society.
And you really do work in an organized way with not only individuals, but also businesses, I understand.
Yes, I have consulted with nonprofits in the past and will probably continue to do so at some level. My real goal at this point, looking forward, is to be working mostly with families because that is such a special experience.
Well, I went onto your website. If you all want to know more about Debra Goldstein, her website, philanthropyconsulting.com, is available. And I read something here that I want to share with our listeners. I hope I don't embarrass you. I believe that everyone can be a philanthropist. The meaning of the word is not wholly about money, but when an individual of any age devotes time, talent, treasure, or their network to a cause, that's what makes a difference. What better way to nurture and grow those natural altruistic instincts tangibly than with youth? Young people are not waiting for others to lead. They're ready now, creating their own unique ways to give back, role models for us all. And that is Debra Goldstein of Enlightened Philanthropy, her website, philanthropyconsulting.com. We are on KRXA 540 AM. And this show is live streaming now online at radiomonterey.com. If any of you want to tune in that way, you certainly can. We'll be taking a short break soon and coming back to hear more about Debra Goldstein's thoughts and opinions. But I wanted to also mention that archives of this show, Simple Life Radio broadcasts, are available to listen to or download from the pilgrimsway.com website by clicking on Simple Life Radio. It's a tab on the top. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and I will be my own guest next week. You know, Debra, we're coming up on a year anniversary for Simple Life Radio.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. So someone that I love and respect suggested that I interview myself just as a way of giving back. And it's a little edgy for me, but I'm going to do that. So we're going to commemorate that next week with the interviewing of myself. We're also commemorating Winter Solstice with this beautiful rendition of Little Drummer Boy. And I'll let you listen for a moment longer. Little baby blurs of love. I am a poor boy to blurs of love. I have no gift to bring blurs of love. That's fit to give our gift. give me home. Don't need no nothing. And we're back. This is Cynthia Fernandez with you today on Winter Solstice, December 21st. Our guest in studio, Deborah Goldstein, and her website, enlightenedphilanthropy.com, will give you a lot more information about Deborah, the kind of work she does, and ongoing events that she has in the community here on the Central Coast of California. So, Deborah, welcome back. I'm glad your voice had a little bit of a rest.
Thank you.
And I wonder, given the work that you do in our community, which is working with individuals and families and businesses and organizations around investing in the future by way of their talents, support, and treasure of whatever sort, I wonder if you have a success story that you could kind of tickle our fancy with.
Sure, I'd be happy to share. So one of my favorite client experiences has been with a philanthropic family. They are three generations strong. The grandparents started the foundation. They have their children on the foundation with them. And just within the past few years, they have brought their grandchildren into the process.
Really?
It's a great family, and I'm so honored to know them and to have worked with them. And they actually have, I believe it's seven cousins at the grandchildren level.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity a few years ago to facilitate a meeting of that junior board. And these are the grandchildren, the cousins, who will be eventually moving up to the board and sitting with their parents and hopefully their grandparents to make decisions on where this family's money is making a difference in the world. And I really had fun facilitating the conversation for these six cousins, ages 8 to 20.
Wow.
And, you know, quite an age spread. They're from all around the country, three different communities. And for me, it was really fun to have the conversation with them about their values.
Mm.
And that's where I like to start my philanthropic conversations. And it's especially fun when you have kids talking about values.
I bet.
I think our values change over time, depending on our life situation.
True.
And it was just really great to not only have the conversation about values, but have the conversation about how is it that you are three branches of this family and you all have similar values? Where has that come from?
Mm.
And you have to look to your parents and your grandparents. And to me, finishing that facilitation and that workshop with them and really seeing some light bulbs go off in the room was very rewarding.
I bet.
And that is the type of success that I look for, is to not only have adults, but to have kids look at how they're making an impact in a different way.
That's amazing. That's such an empowering experience for those little people.
I think it was. And I think for them, it was fun. They had been giving for some time already,
mm-hmm.
and they had been having these conversations. But to have a conversation with a professional and a non-family member,
mm-hmm.
and sort of pull all the pieces together for them took their discussions to a new level.
I bet. So tell me, Deborah, you have a perspective that many of us don't have. I wonder from your perspective what you see the trend is in our culture today, and, you know, how is it regarding giving and service? How is it trending?
Good question. You know, I think some of the things that I see is more and more people really following their passions in terms of giving back. We see nonprofits being formed regularly because somebody has a passion, there's a cause that they want to do something about, make a difference, and they are so passionate that they are willing to give up potentially whatever they would make normally and create a nonprofit and really pursue this life of giving back. And I think we also see it in the corporate world. We're starting to see a lot more companies that are created with this mission in mind from the ground up. It's not an afterthought, but it is part of the genetic makeup and culture of companies that are starting these days.
Mm-hmm. So people are really following their passions more as the kind of work they do.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's really great to hear, because to me that speaks of people living more fully. I have a background in corporate America in Silicon Valley, not too far from here, and I remember all too well how it felt to go into a job that I was making good money at, had tons of responsibility and the same amount of pressure, certainly. Competition, yes. It wasn't really the kind of work I wanted to do, but I was able to raise my daughter, and, you know, I was a homeowner back then in the 80s, and I thought to myself, gosh, you know, this is so wearing on my spirit to just push my body into these contortions to get the quote-unquote job done. Someday I'm going to live differently. And I think that we have better health, we have better relationships, we have better parenting skills, good citizen skills, when we're living in a way that really is satisfying, that really is rewarding in a very natural way, not just the money.
I think that's so true, and I think that is why I start my conversation with values, because it really is about what do we value, and then how do we build our life around that, whether it be the work we're doing, the volunteering we're doing, the conversations we have with our children, our families, our friends. It's all based from that place of value and that foundation that we all have. We may have different values, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of becoming centered with our values,
right,
and living those today, not someday.
Right, right. Putting them into practice immediately.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they can be put into practice in small ways. They don't have to be earth-shatteringly large life changes.
It's so true. And I think, you know, I'm wearing this scarf today, which I know you can't see.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. It was tie-dyed by a young man who was awarded the Outstanding Youth Philanthropist in our community just last month.
Oh, really?
And I have started a blog on New Voices of Philanthropy, or it's a feature on my blog, and I will be interviewing one young philanthropist every month. And he and I had such a delightful conversation, and at the end of the conversation, he gave me one of these scarves that he has been selling to make money for a cause that is near and dear to his heart, Dance Kids. And to me, that was just so touching, because many of us would think someone, I think he's just turning 11, and many of us would think a child of this age wouldn't necessarily have something to give. But that touching moment, to me, just spoke volumes about who he was, and what he will become in this world. And I think it's those special moments between people that allow or create this ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, that's just being, you know, that's being philanthropic.
Mm.
That was love of humankind. And he put me in a good mood as a result of that action. I went on and I passed it on in some way to the next person. That's what happens.
And now again, you passed it on again.
In a bigger way.
I so appreciate you sharing that. And you know what's great about that story for me is that he actually used his own hands and his own energy, his own creativity to put something together that could be exchanged for the kind of funds he's looking for to support his cause of choice.
Yes, and I think that's what's so fun about the youth of today is they have, you know, they are not closed-minded yet.
Mm.
They are so optimistic and so excited about the world, and they find it within themselves the the skills that they have that allows them to contribute in the way that they contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And it just reminded me, this is a completely different sort of thing, but I want to share it anyway. Mm-hmm. When I was 8 years old, I didn't have a bicycle. Okay. I know that's unheard of these days. And my mom said, okay, if you and your sister want to have a bicycle, then you can go around the neighborhood and sell Lifesavers and, you know, Wrigley's chewing gum. She bought it at wholesale or whatever, and then we sold it at what it's supposed to be sold retail-wise. And let me tell you, it took a long time. It probably took us 3 or 4 months making, you know, 50 cents a day or something to save up the $8 that my bike cost. But I really appreciated my bike. You know, like I felt really grown up.
Yes.
It wasn't given to me. I earned it. And I really was looking forward to having it. It was something that I anticipated as I was walking through the neighborhood after school. And I think that sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong, sometimes our cause can be closer to home, where we actually put in the treasure and the talent and the skills to earn our way so that we're not a dependent on other people, so that we have the self-respect and the confidence for ourselves in a quiet way, maybe. But, you know, it's something that we really put our mind to.
That's a great way to look at it. And I think we don't always recognize that. And so I appreciate you bringing up that point. There are just so many ways that we can give back. And it doesn't have to be about the money. It can be sharing a smile.
Mm.
It can be, actually on my way here, I baked some cookies last night, and I dropped some off at a friend's house.
Aww.
You know, it's just those simple things like that.
Yep.
That are philanthropic in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, encourage that person to then give on to the person after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I read on your website somewhere about you had a list of different ideas or different examples of what philanthropic can be in a practical way. And I think, you know, helping someone with their homework, taking care of a sick friend, being available for counseling, you know, that sort of thing. What am I missing?
Those are some good examples. I think there's also, you know, the young person who is really savvy with technology, helping grandma or grandpa
Absolutely. Figure
out email or get them on Facebook. We certainly see, actually speaking of social media, we see a lot of people sharing their causes via social media. So
yes.
That's a huge movement today is I'm running a race for this cause. Will you please support me? And here, I want you to know about it. And I'm going to share this with my hundreds of friends on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever it is that you're using these days. That's becoming another way to give back. There's also sharing the things that we're good at. In this case, with this young man who created this scarf, he knew how to tie-dye. And he, you know, put that he likes to do art. This is something that I can create to then raise money to give to the cause that I want to. People can serve on boards, and maybe they have expertise in the realm of law or in tax preparation,
mm-hmm.
or in fundraising or in organizational development or marketing. And all of those things are needed things mm-hmm. on a board. So that's how we give our talents to something.
Absolutely. Those are great examples. So, Deborah, I wanted to look at the other side of the coin. What is the danger then to a culture that really doesn't have what we'll call the impaired, you know, the danger of having an impaired giving gene, where people tend to think about, you know, survival of the fittest, you know, I need to get ahead, dog eat dog. You hear these phrases. It's common to see examples of them in movies, but also in community. And I just wonder from your perspective what you would say the danger of having that kind of culture develop in a community.
I think a culture like that really unravels our soul. It keeps us from being able to fully experience some of the amazing joys in our world when we are so focused on ourselves and our need to get ahead, rather than looking at the world through the lens of how can I make this world better, not only for me, but for my family, for my neighbor, for the person I don't even know that I pass walking on the street. And my hope is that we move farther and farther away from a society in which it is this dog-eat-dog, you know, even keeping up with the Joneses sort of feeling.
That's true.
Is, you know, it's not about the stuff.
Yes.
And I think that's especially an important reminder around this time of year, is it is about the experiences we are having as humans with one another.
Absolutely. And that is a great reminder. That is a really great reminder. You know, I have to say, I'm guilty. My husband and I have a retail store, and it's the holidays, and this is the second busiest time for us in the store, and we are local independent, and we need that income to pay our rent, okay? So my world, to some degree, is about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly try to come at it from a different vantage point. We try to have things of value, things that are made in the U.S., things that are made well, sustainable, responsible to the environment, etc. But anybody who knows us knows you can come in and find a real person to talk to. And I don't think it's too difficult to really uncover what our value system is. So my comments really, I think, are testimony that because we have a society based on commercialism and capitalism does not mean it needs to be void of philanthropy.
Absolutely. And I will say that I love independent bookstores. And so I'm certainly glad that you are around. And if there's any gift to give, it should be a book.
And we have so much more. Well, I certainly appreciate hearing that. So we're going to have to take another break here. Time is just whizzing by, but please stay with us. We'll be back with Deborah Goldstein from enlightenphilanthropy.com. If you want to have more information on her, you're welcome to do that. And if you will stay with us, we'll be back shortly here on Simple Life Radio. And we've got these great a cappella singers singing Little Dremel Boy again. In studio, we are honored to have our guest Deborah Goldstein with us today from Enlightened Philanthropy. This is the time of year that most of us, unfortunately, I think about giving to others. I'm very happy to think about giving to others, and truth be told, I'm very happy to be reminded because life is busy, and I need reminders to think about baking for family and friends and sending cards of appreciation, etc. And today is winter solstice, another reminder for a changing of season. We're heading into the darkest part of the year, and that is actually intended, some say, to have us go inside, to have us reflect, review, and renew. And that means that much like any of the animals that shed their skin, there is a renewal process that can be whole and like turning over in another chapter, using a book metaphor, starting anew. You have a choice. We have a choice every day in many ways. We don't control everything, of course, but we certainly do influence it. So, Deborah, before we went on break, you were talking about, you know, the value that there really is in having a life experience where you're connected to other people. You're not just thinking about yourself, and you're feeling that sense of contribution that you can help someone, that you can make a difference. And I was thinking to myself, you know, we have this word philanthropy that apparently is part of a modern civilization, but from what the little bit I know about indigenous cultures all over the world, they didn't call it philanthropy. They didn't call it charity. There was no such language, really. And yet they live like, in a village, they live like a unit. They had multi-generations. They certainly had some organization of structure and responsibility. They looked out for the little ones in terms of mentoring through story, through you know, telling about the hunt and where the food came from so you could really appreciate the life that was sacrificed for you to continue to live. And I wonder to myself, I think about these things, you know, I'm kind of strange sometimes, but I wonder, how do we learn the value of thinking about the future in that way? I mean, they used to think about seven generations, which meant If you kind of go through the math, they would not be around to receive the benefit of the investment. That's what's so significant to me about thinking in terms of seven generations. You're not going to be here. You could live to be 120. You're not going to be here, you know? And so it's thinking about really investing in the culture. And I just wonder how we can sort of facilitate or encourage or, you know, maintain that sense of looking into the future that way, where the design of the future is a regenerative design, where it not just sustains itself, it gets better, it regenerates in a natural way, and there's no controlling, you don't have laws and you know, enforcement of rulings, etc., to keep some kind of order. It's a natural occurrence. And that design would not inflate, really, or deplete. It would just keep everything buoyant. What do you think, Deborah Goldstein? What do we do to invest in that way of thinking about the future?
Oh, my gosh, Cynthia. So many amazing points that you just brought to light there. And let me start with the point about the seven generations.
Yeah.
Because that's not something that I've given thought to before. And yet, it's so beautiful to think of a culture that has such forethought in everything that they do. And it's also very timely, I think, that you bring that up, because impact has become such a huge measure of nonprofit success in today's world. Is what impact are we having on the ground today?
Mm.
And so it's an interesting sort of juxtaposition of the impact that we can have today versus the impact that we can have seven generations from now.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, my hope would be that the impact that we're having today would lead us to a future seven generations from now where we are not seeing some of these chronic issues and problems that the nonprofit world is addressing seven generations from now. So my hope would be that the impact that we're having today helps to eradicate some of these issues that we're having.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just having this conversation about what is the impact that we're having, and what do we want to have?
Mm-hmm.
It's such an important question for anybody who's considering giving money or time, or talent to something that they're passionate about. Is how can I make a difference? And how will this make a difference for the next person?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're at a perfect time to have this conversation, as you said, because just because of the holidays, more families are going to be getting together, and there's going to be this sort of quiet, awkward time when you don't know what to say because you're not part of each other's everyday life. So what about just introducing a question about if you could make a difference, what would you want to do?
That's such a great question. And there's just so many around giving that you could have at the dinner table. You could have, you know, in the quiet moments with grandma or grandpa sitting by the fireplace, which we may not need here, I see in the weather forecast coming up. Having those questions, how do you want to make an impact? What do you envision for the world in the next year? What do you envision for your community in the next year? What do you envision for our family? What do you see as our family legacy? It's a great time for families that have family businesses or that have a long tradition of philanthropy to share that story of how is it that great grandma and grandpa or great great grandpa started, you know, whatever the business is, and it has now been passed down from generation to generation in our family.
I'm really glad you said that because I was thinking, in addition to planning ahead, I think it's equally as important to understand where we've come from and ask grandma and grandpa, you know, when you were my age, what was it like for you? What kinds of things did you do that really made a difference? Because with the youth, one of the biggest challenges, I think, is that they don't know how they can make a difference. They don't sometimes think they make a difference. And I believe that's something that's part of depression for a lot of youth. They just don't think they matter. And when you listen to a relative, it could be a mom, dad, any kind of relative, could be a family friend. When you were my age, what was it like for you? My granddaughter says to me, Nana, tell me a story about when you were a kid. And it's just so perfect because it gives them a frame of reference and it creates a closeness and a bond that's natural. It's real. You're passing down family history. You're teaching, you're giving an example that is close to home. Yeah.
That's so great that you further illustrate that your granddaughter likes to hear those stories. And I think as a grandparent, you're expressing you also love to be heard. You know, it goes both ways.
Well, it's nice when I can remember them.
And I think anybody that is, especially in the world of very wealthy families where a child is set to inherit something, it's so important for their understanding of who they are to know that family history and to understand where that has come from and how they are now able to benefit individually and help benefit the world as a result.
I'm so glad to have you here. This is a wonderful conversation, and I just looked at the clock and realized we're quickly losing the rest of our time. I have a couple of questions that I like to ask at the end of the interview, near the end of the interview, because we are co-sponsored by Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden in downtown Carmel. Can you tell us your all-time favorite book?
Cynthia, that's such a difficult question. I live in a house filled with books. I grew up in a house filled with books. What I will tell you is one of the most influential books on me in my life. I read as a young adult. My favorite author at the time was Madeleine L'Engle. And she wrote, she had some books that were very well known. She wrote a book called The Arm of the Starfish, which is not so well known. And at this time, in my mind, I was starting to be a budding marine biologist. And I was so enthralled that one of the researchers in this book was a sea star researcher and researched how it is that this animal can regenerate its arms when it loses them.
That's very cool.
And to me, that was fascinating as a kid. And so that is one of the I would say, pivotal books, I would say, that I have read in my life that helped put me on that path, which is a whole other story.
Well, but look, that actually is very much in line with your philanthropic work. How to regrow the arm and the starfish. Mm. You know, how to put things right again.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
I love that. I've never thought of that before. Thank you for that enlightening moment. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's just amazing. And so what are you reading now?
I am in between books. They are both Brené Brown books. One is, which I just finished reading, is The Gifts of Imperfection, which to me was a very beautiful book. And really talks about how we can all live wholeheartedly in our lives. And it's about being vulnerable. It's about being compassionate. It's about having courage. And it's about connecting with others. And that book has really resonated with me. And so I'm looking forward to moving on to her third book, which is Daring Greatly.
What a great title.
Yes, very great title.
Wow.
I'm excited for the read ahead.
Well, Gifts of Imperfection is for sale at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think any time that we can take a look at imperfection with a light heart, perhaps some positive attitude. In the case of Gifts of Imperfection, it at least implies that there is a gift of imperfection. That's always nice. We have another book called No Mistakes. I think we need to be reminded there are no mistakes. You know, even if you have that thinking in your mind, it's going to make you happier. It's going to be a little more positive.
Yes.
I'm so grateful to have you here, Deborah. If you want to know more information about Deborah, her website, enlightenedphilanthropy.com. Take a look. She's doing great work in the community. She's got a class, a workshop coming up that is on her homepage there. And we'll hopefully have you back at some point.
Thank you. I would so enjoy that. It's been a wonderful conversation, Cynthia.
Thank you. And so, again, another day is behind us. I want to just remind everybody that next week I'm going to be flying solo here, interviewing myself. If you have any suggested questions that I might ask myself, I would be happy to consider those. Send me an email to simplelife@pilgrimsway.com. That's simplelife@pilgrimsway.com. And I will look forward to seeing you then. Have a great winter solstice. Have a great holiday season with family and friends. Take care.